Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the March 15 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Greg Ginder. He's at FC Stone out of Chesterfield, Missouri. Jerry Golke is with us from the Golke Group. He's in Chicago, Illinois normally, though he's traveling someplace in California. We'll find out where in a moment. Elaine Cubb is at Mastering the Grain Markets, and she's in Elkhorn, Nebraska. Mike Zuzlow is at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week, of course, a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. Let's get a list of items that we'd like to discuss. Maybe hold down to two total. Greg Ginder, I think I want to start with you, please.
Sure. Yeah, I was very interested to see some of the export sales that came across this week for beans and for corn, but primarily for beans. It seems like there may be some kind of front running going on here in the export market, trying to get out ahead of a potential tariff situation with the Chinese. So also we'll take a look at the U.S. river system and how basis has kind of been showing some interesting developments.
And Jerry Golke of the Golke Group, on your list of things to discuss for the day?
Well, probably the thing that's coming up, you know, at the end of March is the acreage report, and we've seen the you know, FC Stone is out with theirs, and Allendale's out with theirs, and we've had ours out, not publicly, but ours is right in line with Allendale. We're at 92 at least in beans, and something under an 89 in corn. That presents a problem, not a problem, a good problem, I guess, for corn guys. Short-term wise, we still got people looking at this big carryover, that mountain of corn. But however, in the long term, if the acres are right, even if they aren't unchanged, we see a carry out well below 2 billion, maybe at levels that nobody wants to dream about yet. So that's the good news.
And Elaine Cubb, on your list of discussion items.
Well, I think the interesting thing right now is that rally in the hard red winter wheat, so that drought that's going on in the southern plains, and I'm glad that, you know, we're going to have a good insight from Kansas to talk about that. So as far as it affects wheat on its own, that is an interesting rally. Will it ever carry over into the spring wheat is a good question. But I think longer term, I think it's interesting to this audience, because what is the potential that that drought persists or continues or spreads and becomes something that does eventually affect the feed grain markets or corn and soybeans as we get into May or June? That's something to talk about.
And Mike Zuzlow, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison.
I think what the biggest thing I'm talking about with clients this week, Todd, is whether the weather bull is fading and whether the trade war bear is awakening. And so that's probably something that would be helpful to discuss if I'm hearing it. I'm sure everybody else is as well.
Okay. Well, I think I want to start, Greg, with you. And the export sales for soybeans, I found that fairly interesting. You're there in St. Louis and watching both the basis and the soybean sales. Do you believe that it's front-loaded at this point? And for what reasons?
Yeah, I think it's they pretty well tipped their hand on this one. We did, in the last 2 weeks, we've done about 140 million bushels of old crop beans that have been pretty much up in the spot month in the nearby deliveries. You know, the Brazilian beans have been getting cheaper in the world, but the U.S. beans are still 2 to 3 cents cheaper and the cheapest in the world. The only drawback is that the proteins on the U.S. beans are still about 2 to 3% lower than the Brazilian beans. So that does make the Brazilians a little bit more attractive for some markets. It's an unseasonal kind of export number. You don't normally see big March bean sales. Generally, we see kind of a winding down and a switch over to the South Americans, given that they have harvest beans and access to large quantities of new crop. When you take a little bit deeper look into some of these sales, you'll also see that most of them are sold as an option origin, which means at any time, the buyer can request South American beans instead of U.S. So that's kind of a big deal. Seems to me that the U.S. traders are definitely front running a situation that could develop tariff wise on beans with China. Doesn't necessarily mean there will be one, but it certainly acts like it. I think what is most curious is that in the river system itself, the Gulf values have been falling. And normally you don't see Gulf values falling when you have such large sales. And on top of that, you're seeing barge freight that's actually getting weaker. So if you have a larger number of beans that needs to be moved to the export system, you typically require more freight. Now, the only offsetting fact of that is that we have had a pretty good bean run here with the market rally. So one has to wonder if that's continuing to kind of work its way through the logistics and that we're just starting to come out on the backside of it. But it sure feels like to me, given the issues that we had along the river system as far as bottlenecks and things like that, that you would see a rise in basis. And we've seen just the opposite.
Greg, is your discussion related to the aluminum and steel tariffs or to the intellectual property right discussions that the president has been having over the last couple of weeks, or to both?
I would say it's probably closer to the intellectual property concerns that the president's been speaking about. I don't know that the steel is that big of an issue. I think that's more localized to maybe the NAFTA agreements. But it certainly, you know, the Chinese do export a good amount of steel, just not necessarily here to the U.S.
Do you think the Chinese can shut down U.S. Import of soybeans into their country and survive okay?
I don't. Not for long. I think generally speaking, now they do have a huge strategic reserve for grain, and that's reserved for corn, beans, and wheat. So, I mean, if we're talking about 300 million bushels of storage that they have, you know, they only need about a third or a little bit more of that for beans. So, I mean, it's not that they don't have the capacity. I mean, it depends on what the Chinese people are able to accept, I guess, is the answer to that. So if they can get through to August and September and they haven't used their reserves by only buying Brazilian beans, you could make the case that maybe they could go another few months, but I don't think they can go 12 months without having to buy U.S. beans. So, I mean, the effect will be felt, but I think it will be it will just be something that we'll kind of have to deal with on a month-to-month basis.
To add to Greg's point, as far as from another perspective, is I think that we still have a meal issue to have to clean up as far as the fundamentals, Todd. We've got the U.S. meal trading right around the same price at the Gulf as we do the futures is real close to where the Argentine meal is. Argentine meals come down to about $410 a ton, and Rotterdam's kind of flattened out. And so I think that based upon what the Gulf has done in relation to our competition, we're still very competitive, but we also have seen a pretty substantial correction with the idea that, are we rationing demand? And I think we have rationed some demand in the meal, but I put the heart and soul of the bean market still in the meal market's hands, both fundamentally and technically. And this week, to answer your question, has come right directly to the heart of that. We've tested major support in some of the bean contracts, some of the meal contracts, and that November bean contract in particular, that old high from last January of 1020 and 3/4. That's a really important level for me that I don't want to see taken out on a weekly close. I do think that in the short run, we have a situation where the beans can only do so much by themselves. And we just simply need the wheat and the corn to lead this next rally higher, especially as Jerry was talking about with the acres. As we get closer to those planted acreage numbers, I think it gets more and more difficult for the beans to carry the load by themselves.
So is this where you stand on the weather market and it expiring at this point?
Well, I think the weather bull's fading in Kansas City. I mean, in terms of the wheat crop, and there are two weather events coming through on the models, and they don't necessarily disagree very well, but to see Kansas crop ratings decline again in very poor conditions, to go up to 53% and cross that 50% threshold, and for May wheat to take out the 200-day moving average during the week that happens, as you better be on guard that there's some issues coming that the trade is not like necessarily right now.
So wait, on the wheat side, are you still friendly to that market, or you think they're fading the weather at this point as a bull?
Yeah, right. Wheat is one of those markets where you can go down substantially, and we're almost at a 50% correction right now in the wheat from the January lows, and it can look all over with, and it can sure pull the corn down with it, and then it regenerates itself in April. That's kind of what I'm looking at, is I'm trying to get corn and bean hedges done before the acreage report with a wheat-led rally. I'm worried about that between now and the end of the month. The second half of March is what I'm most nervous about in terms of regenerating the rally in the corn and the beans and the wheat altogether.
Meaning you think that if the rainfall comes in, wheat won't die, and we'll get to the acreage report, and it's going to show some numbers that maybe folks won't like.
That's exactly right. Yeah, the momentum shifts away from being able to turn on and go higher on weather and supply, and then we have to go back to more of a demand-related market, which is more of a 45-degree angle, so to speak.
And so, Lane Cub, this morning I made a phone call to the southeastern part of Kansas, talked to a grain elevator co-op buyer there. They haven't had rainfall for 165 days. They're on center pivots and dry land both, depending on which side of the river they're on. She says that at 87 degrees for today, and they cool off over the next several days, that there's about 10 days for them before they make a decision as to whether this wheat's going to live or die, and it's coming out, of course, of dormancy at this point. What have you been hearing, and what are you thinking about that marketplace?
Yeah, that drought is a real problem, but I will echo what Mike said kind of about the timing of it. This might not be a rally that can last through the end of the month, simply because of the timing of it and the fact that there is a lot of wheat in the world. So we do see those 53% very poor rapport in Kansas, similar numbers in the Texas Panhandle, which is really where the center of that drought is. But the problem is that the millers will be able to blend in other wheat unless the drought persists all the way through spring wheat planting season. So I think we've got to get towards the end of April, and if we don't see the drought subside here in the northern plains of the United States, and certainly up into Canada, where they also have, you know, severe long-term and short-term drought centered right around Regina. So this is the entirety of the North American wheat growing region, really, or the milling wheat growing region. So if that persists, you know, later into the April sort of May timeframe, I think it's a rally that could pop back up. But I agree with Mike in that in the near term, it might have got a little too hot too fast.
Okay. And finally, I'll come to you, Jerry Gulke. Can you kind of take what you've heard and then put it into what your thought about it, the marketplace is at this point?
Well, I think to take on what Elaine just mentioned, the Northern Plains, we have farms in North Aberdeen and also in the Northwest and by Minot. And for the first time in a long time, we're looking at planting some spring wheat, kind of for rotational purposes. It'll come out of corn, but it is very dry. The good news is my son-in-law up there would say all my potholes are dry and I'm going to be able to plant everything. So sometimes when you have potholes dry, they don't wetten up again, and that could be a real problem come June. So yeah, dryness up there is going to be a concern, and certainly in spring wheat, the stocks aren't that high now, but if we get a million or a million and a half acres more spring wheat, which may be a stretch, that'll help that situation if the crop comes through. Otherwise, looking at the planted acres coming in here, one of the things that, you know, people use a ratio and that kind of thing, and I did some studies and got a column coming out at Top Producer that looks at the net disposable income after you plant all this stuff, and I did it on my farm, and I still farm enough just to be dangerous, and I looked at it, and I think back in February, I had like $9 an acre profit, and beans were like 28 or 30. And then it increased to that higher level. But if you look at a 1,000-acre farmer or a 2,000-acre farmer, if he's only going to make $50,000 or $60,000 farming before federal tax and Social Security, that's not very good. Beans will return more, at least on my cash flow that I look at, and everybody's is different, of course. But I think when Gary Shickney, I think in your earlier comments with him, and the discussion was interesting because he's reiterated the cash flow problem that's at hand and probably getting worse. And that's what we're seeing from a lot of our clients all over the country and other areas as well, other people as well, that the net disposable income is one thing. And of course, the corn and soybean ratio is another. And we've got a lot of large clients, farmers that 10, 15,000 acres are switching to soybeans. So if there's a surprise, it may come at the end of March at that acreage report that suggests that corn is a lot less and beans are a lot more. Now, having said that, there's a lot of people out there talking about 91.5, 92 million bushels or acres. And the market just blew right through that, didn't even shrug its shoulders. So it's telling us that maybe we need 92 million acres of beans and can stand 90 million, 89 million acres of corn and still not at least get concerned now long-term with the demand that we see coming in corn, mainly because of South America and also our demand getting better. That says long-term that we could see corn just gradually eat through all this stuff and be a good profitable situation unless farmers do what a lot of TV guys say, and that's that they sit on the tractor seat and love to plant corn and screw it up, and we plant 92 million acres of corn for some reason. So I think there's an awful lot out there that's gonna really change things. But we've been fairly bullish corn. The bullishest corn that I've been in my entire life as an analyst, I guess, since last December and October. And today I looked at it and I said, you know, we're at some levels that I thought we would get to in maybe April. And once you reach those levels, I found myself getting more bullish. So I'm getting a little nervous that maybe I'm trying to buy a short-term high here that we do pull back into that March report.
Wait, are you the most bullish you've been in your lifetime, or you're the most bullish you've been since last October for corn? Which one did...
From a holding corn standpoint, there were a lot of people that didn't want to sell last year's corn, and we have we know there's people out there with corn in the bin, so I have more than that sold because I don't store much just because of the logistics. But I think from owning old crop, but also not being hedged, we sold some cash at $4. We finally got to that level, and we knew there was cash flow. So we cash contracted about 15% of our crop. But that was the first sale we made for new crop and then increased some of the old crop. But from a standpoint of having... not having a lot of hedges on in corn, that's probably the best situation I've been in quite a while, since the last time corn was $6 or $7. It just looks like that we are building a demand out here, and a lot of large farmers that do have corn left. One guy said, why would I plant more of the same? He said, I'll leave the corn in the bin, I'll plant the beans, and I know I can make a profit. He said, if I have to store them in bags next fall, I will. So, and that goes right on into the northern plains. We're doing it in North Dakota, one farm in North Aberdeen. Up there, we'll not have corn on it at all. It'll be 100% beans. So it's and some of those beans on beans up there. So it's a matter of cash flow, I think. And corn to me just seemed to have the best potential to get to $4, maybe higher even this summer. And that's why we're still pretty friendly. But I've got to watch the momentum and watch this. Thing play out in South America, and of course then the acreage report could be. Yeah, I've got a gut feeling, and that doesn't work so well because you can take Alka-Seltzer and get over that, but I've got a gut feeling that whatever the market says on March 30th or 29th, we'll probably close higher for the day regardless.
Greg Ginder, I'll come back to you now because you certainly have a different viewpoint of this. If we're 92.5 million acres in, and the Chinese step away from the export market for soybeans, that sounds a little on the disastrous side.
Oh, well, I mean, it wouldn't be necessarily like a bean apocalypse or anything like that, Todd, but I mean...
Can I tweet that one out? I like that.
Yeah, trademark that. To me, you just don't know what's going to happen. You can just kind of, you have to kind of interpret a little bit and, kind of read the tea leaves a little bit, but it looks like it feels like it's the white elephant in the room, you know, and nobody really wants to, I mean, it's gotten to the point where CNBC is now running the same story about every two or three days that's how the Chinese are going to try to retaliate on a tariff issue. And they're right. That would be one of the biggest sticks they could swing at us. But it's not a for sure thing, and we just won't know until we're in the throes of it. So what it feels like to me, it's a risk management type of issue. I don't think that we're going to be seeing a situation, if worse comes to worse, where the beans will be the only one to fall. But I certainly think they'll be the ones that will fall the farthest and the hardest. But for right now, you just can't, you just can't be Chicken Little, screaming the sky's falling. I do feel like corn has some pretty good footing and could potentially see some better days going forward. But at the same time, I'm a fan of getting some new crop sales on, as a profitability hedge. On soybeans, I'm certainly looking at a situation where the Brazilians have got a big crop, potentially getting bigger. The Argentines have a crop that is subpar. All in, I think the continent of South America has a pretty good crop, and the world's not really hurting for beans. At the same time, our ending stocks are going up. It feels like to me that the meal situation will definitely support beans, but at the same time, if I was keeping score, I'd say the Bears are kind of a little bit ahead on the scoreboard right now.
Mike, if I remember correctly, Argentina has more than half of a crop of beans in storage. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
So where do you land at this point?
I think if I took the Rosario Exchange number for soybean production that they put out today of 40 million tons, that's 7 million less than USDA's number. And I took the trade expectations of a 116 plus number for Brazil, which is 3 million more than USDA. You're looking at a 156 production between those two countries with USDA at 160. So we could say, okay, let's take 2 to 3 million off to give us wiggle room for lower demand. And you're trading then a 91 to 92 million metric ton global carryover. That does a lot to, I think, Todd, take away from these bigger US acres in the big picture. So when I, taking Jerry's point and Greg's point and Elaine's point and put them all together, in my mind, what I'm hearing, if I were a producer and looking at my own analysis also, if I take into consideration supply-demand fundamentals outright, given the demand we have right now, I mean, the ethanol demand is running 8% ahead of where we were 2 years ago. The last 9 weeks of corn export sales were the largest ever in volume. And so you're talking about demand that you haven't seen in many, many years. In fact, that I think we're back to 1994 levels for weekly export sales in corn today. So you're talking about supply-demand fundamentals that don't make me very concerned about downside exposure in ag commodities. What I worry about is this deflationary trade war issue where we lose the fund investment, and that is going right back to the interest rates and the stronger dollar. So this is where it goes back to Greg's point about risk management. I'm still trying to get 650 per acre on gross revenue in beans, 800, 850 in corn, locking those in, saying thank you very much. I can defend it and buy it back if I see a return of another rally. It's just, that's kind of where I'm at right now.
Mike raised a really good point about the investment money, whether that comes in or not. And it's such a spooky bunch. We've noticed that this week in soybeans, they had built up such a huge net long position, 17 times as many long positions as short positions. And then probably because of these trade war headlines, they just, flew right out of there. And that seems to have tapered off here, hopefully. But I guess I'd be interested to know, everybody's opinions about whether that sell-off in the soybean long positions continues just because of the spookiness of the fund traders.
Well, we probably won't know that until a week from tomorrow, because what they do in the last, Monday and Tuesday was pretty strong, which would suggest good exports, and we saw that. But the CFTC report comes out as of last Tuesday. So now we got to wait until the following Friday to find out what we did this week. There's a lot of conjecture in it, but I think the large spec that we watch has went from extremely negative to positive for good reason. They're opportunists. They want to be in a position to capture what they see coming. And I think you're right. They probably took some profits. But, you got to look from January 12th when we had a key reversal in beans to where we're at now in corn as well. That was we've had a pretty good rally. And weather markets, as I remember, at least what seems to be the historical patterns, they last about 6 to 8 weeks, and that runs out in beans. I did that a couple about a week ago, last week, and I guess I have to qualify my bullishness on corn is that we've sold a lot more beans than corn, percentage wise. Probably 40% of our cash, our production is now cash contracted, from 990 to 1005, probably in that area, or 1040. I mean, in beans, even in North Dakota, where that's a pretty good profit. And most of the guys we talked to that have got them cash contracted, elevators, are saying that they're running 35% of forward cash contracted ready, to compare to all of normal for the whole year. So they're seeing farmers selling the cash ahead, and probably it's going to be difficult for them to move out of soybeans once if soybeans did go down and they wanted to plant corn. So we're hedged, and we have some puts on, but I'm really concerned about the acreage report, and we haven't even got into our weather market yet. So there could be another weather market coming next summer. If one of these days the dry guys are going to be right, and we're going to produce a 46 bushel an acre bean yield and 166 corn, which would still be relatively pretty decent. That would change things abruptly, I think.
Yeah, Jerry's right. It certainly is dry in central Illinois. I talked to a few of my friends around home there, and there's no tiles running. You know, they've gotten anywhere from 4 to 5 inches of rain over the last month, which they were very grateful for because they were just super dry. And whenever I asked them how much more rain they need, they said another 4 or 5 inches. So surprisingly enough, when you look at the drought monitor, it kind of leads you to believe everything's all hunky-dory. But, you know, you get to the guys on the ground when they're digging post holes and things like that, and they're not hitting very much water, and tile pipes aren't running. It certainly is dry. So, I mean, that is a very valid point. There is a subsoil moisture issue that we are in the middle of right now.
Well, Todd, maybe I'd like to ask all the people a question. Maybe if you were farming, and with what you can see going forward, which would you plant that you think, in all things considered, that you'd probably lose less of? I mean, lose the least amount of money. If we're dry and we get a crop problem in beans, they're probably going to get explosive. What would you plant if you had a gun to your head and said, here's what I think I'm going to, because that's what a lot of guys are looking at. Which crop will I lose less in case I make an error?
Well, don't you think they made that decision already, though, and it's a done deal? The seed's been purchased?
Seed can be returned,
I think
Todd.
Flexible stuff out there, but
I suppose with soybeans, then they could put anhydrous on.
Yeah. I think there's still some flexibility, because we hear from a lot of farmers yet that said that, well, I'm just trying to resist all I can not to plant 100% beans. And these are 10,000-acre farmers. They said the only problem is I don't really planning harvesting that many beans. But we're seeing a big movement. That's like even Allendale saw it out in Nebraska and Iowa, where you could move some corn on corn acres to beans yet. But I think a lot of these guys are looking at it and saying, well, if worse comes to worse, can we get a drought in Missouri, or we get one in Iowa and Illinois doesn't? Which crop would probably benefit the most? And probably beans could rally pretty easily from there. So they're looking at bushels times price, saying, I probably don't have a lot of downside risk in the gross having been half sold, but in the upside, if there's a crop problem somewhere here or in South America next year again, we got a bean market that's probably going to be at that $10 to $11 again.
Does anybody disagree with that on drought helping soybeans more than corn? I've been listening to the guys when we've been out, of course, on our meeting circuit. And over the year, I would think about, and this would mostly be Illinois farmers, 5% of the farmers say they will plant more soybeans. Now, what that translates into in acres, I don't know, but I would think 5 to 10% are saying we're going to plant more soybeans. But the question is, which would a drought help more, corn or soybeans, and which is more explosive? Now, of course, Jerry is saying soybeans. Anybody else think it's the other way around? I think I've heard the other way around from many of the panelists I've been out with.
Well, I guess for me, it would be a regional issue. I know that Missouri is much more sensitive to corn droughts than they are on beans. The lighter soil, some of the temperatures that they get are towards a higher end than some of their neighbors to the north. But I would say in Illinois, it's probably more so a bean. You know, those timely rains. You know, they got to be right on time. So I wouldn't disagree with that.
Anybody else have thoughts?
The only thing I'd say, Todd, is the clients I work with in the irrigated country have such technology now that they don't have to worry about burned up corners anymore. So they're very big corn farmers if they think a drought's coming, because they think that they're going to get a sky high price and they're going to be the ones that perform on the yield. But to Jerry's point, I think these dicamba beans, even if you don't put dicamba on, they really have performed amazingly in some of the corn belt, like the true honest to goodness corn belt of the three I states in Minnesota. You know, when you hear 85, 90 bushel fields of beans, something you haven't heard in our careers until this past couple of years.
All right. So let's think about wrapping it up at this point and get some ideas on marketing from each of you. I think Elaine Cub, I will start with you. Pick your crop, and old or new, it doesn't matter.
Well, I'm one of these people who just bangs on the drum of pre-harvest hedging. So new crop, I mean, I know that we've had a lot of bullish ideas presented here today, and I think there's certainly potential for a summer rally, but that's not an excuse not to get something locked in here, because these are profitable prices for most people.
Greg Ginder?
We've been a little more vocal about new crop. We think that specifically some of the corn prices we've been looking at, like a new crop out of the field for some of the farmers around the 380, seems pretty good territory. If anybody hasn't started, if that's the first place you get in, and I think that's a very good place, because it's better to take the 380 than pay the storage to get you to January 1 and hope for $4 plus.
Jerry Gulkey.
Well, it's a real difficult situation when you get into a profitable place like this, and you have to ask yourself, why are we still at $4 corn in December if so many people were selling? And, you know, I've heard that on the radio and TV analysts, that you got to sell these rallies or buy puts, and all we did is went higher and higher. We've chewed right through that. So the transfer of from weak hands to strong hands is pretty indicative of a pretty strong market in corn. I will look at December corn, and looking at it now, knowing what I think I know, we shouldn't close below $4 or $4.95 again. And if we do, then I got to reassess things and say, maybe I have to put more hedges on or sell some cash, increase the cash situation. And soybeans were heavily sold already. From my standpoint, we have more beans sold in the cash market than probably we have in past years. But that's predicated on our survey of 92 plus million acres of beans. That was considering before Argentina went bust on us, and that changes things a little bit. But if we take out this week's highs, I think in corn, then this thing could get pretty exciting. I think going higher, we'll watch for that. And I really kind of want to be around for that crop report to see just exactly what USDA says. If they do what historically it seems like they do, they'll take. You know, if I told them, or we all told them, that we're going to plant 88 million acres of corn, they'd probably consider 80% of that or some level and say, well, maybe 1.6 less. But I don't think they're going to, because they modify it a little bit. They take the data, but we never see the raw data. So I think they're going to come in somewhere around 91, maybe and a half in beans, and maybe 80, 89 in corn, and leave it open so that they can say, and it's intentions, so they can come back in June and say, well, Jerry said he thought about doing this, but conditions change, and now it's such and such. Leaves them without having to eat crow if they do go out on a limb and make one market go crazy one way or the other.
And finally, Mike Suzzolo.
Well, it looks like March Madness has started in basketball and grains as well, Todd, at this stage. we don't have wheat leading the upside, so we absolutely have to have meal at this point going into the second half of March. I think that's point number one. Point number two, there's strong evidence from a variety of sources that there's going to be a lot of corn in the 17 crop year start to go out as we get towards the acreage report and the grain stocks report, because of cash flow needs, that's going to be even maybe greater than the previous couple 5 years because of the tightness that Jerry was talking about. Number three, I think to wrap everything up, I was talking about was the Atlanta Fed has come out with a real-time GDP number for the first quarter of 1.9%. When we were doing our seminars just a month and a half, 2 months ago, that same reading was 4.2% for the United States. So these are the kind of numbers that are fluctuating. And these are the kind of numbers that you have to pay attention to. So switch your channels once in a while from basketball to marketing.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to this week to our panelists, including Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's out of Atchison, Kansas. Elaine Cubb is with Mastering the Grain Markets from Elkhorn, Nebraska. Jerry Golke of the Golke Group out of Chicago, Illinois. And Greg Ginder joined us from Chesterfield, Missouri, where he works with FC Stone. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.